Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Upgrade your kitchen today with Clearview Cabinetry. We offer a great selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft closed doors and drawers and with cabinet accessories to match your unique style. View our selection of Clearview Cabinetry on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening this week. Save big.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Garrick says these fans calling to draft Bijan with the 12th pick feels like a bunch of UT homers letting their fandom override common sense. I would say a good chunk of them are, but not all of them. I've been taking the pulse of Houston Texans sports fans a bit. He also says, goodness, what do we have to do to get people to understand that drafting a running back in the first round is terrible value based on the position? I do not care if it is the greatest running back prospect in college football history. I am not using a first-round pick on him. There are running backs throughout the draft that can be good. Personally, I like the idea of drafting a running back with your fourth-round pick. Like, I love Achane from A&M. I'm worried that if he runs a 4.2 on his at the combine or on his pro day, he's not going to be there in the fourth round. Somebody else in the Twitch mentioned Roschon Johnson, who was the backup for Bijan, who was a former quarterback converted to a running back. The Spears kid at Tulane, I love. The East Carolina running back, his name's escaping me, I love. A lot of people like Deuce Vaughn. I personally want a third down running back type, like think of a fancy Rex Burkhead, think of a Darren Sproles, that it would be the complement to Damian Pierce. Where he
like
can
a thunder and lightning,
yeah.
Right?
Well, you not even that. Just somebody who can catch the ball out of the backfield on third down, but can also run between the tackles a little.
Then that's what I said. I mean, that's when we're talking about McCaffrey, the reason why McCaffrey upped his value is because as a between the tackles, every down bell cow running back, he just physically isn't built to do that and endure that. But because when you add what he can do out of the backfield, now his value goes up, and now he has more value to the offense, and thus you have to pay him more. But when you look at it and think about true running backs, the thunder and lightning concept is what I like a lot, and that's why, again, I go back to what I know best. But when you look at what Green Bay does between A.J. Dillon, who is that smash him, pound him, knock him down and run him over type back, and an Aaron Jones who catches a ton of balls out of the backfield, can run between the tackles, but is best in space. Now you've got the great complement. If they're both in the backfield, now you got to respect them both. But if you can alternate and go one or the other, you can change up the style, the tempo, the format of what you're running from series to series and even down to down, and it makes the defense play a lot of guessing games, and that's to your benefit. And so I think you're right. I think some of the best running games that we've seen in the history of the NFL have two guys, and one guy's the true main guy that goes for running yards. But the other guy's capable of doing it, but the other guy makes you have to really pay attention to all the things he can do out in space, on the edge, and in the passing game.
Damian Pierce catching some strays on our Twitch, saying people are saying he's overrated. He's not very good. I thought that he was very good as a rookie, especially for a rookie. Do I think he's ever going to be like a top five, top 10 running back? Debatable. Not five, maybe top 10. But also, like, defenses changed the way that they were playing the Texans last year once they realized, okay, Damian Pierce is somebody we need to game plan for, whereas Davis Mills is not. We need to spend our attention trying to slow down Damian Pierce than we do needing to slow down the Houston Texans passing game. So I think Damian Pierce would look a lot better if you do have better quarterback play, a better offense. Just by default, the running back's going to produce better if he has better talent around him.
No question about it, but I think the one thing that we can't lose sight of either is the fact that no matter where you take and what your philosophy is towards a running back, you best have a better than average offensive line too. Because you can draft Bijan Robinson, but if you don't have the right offensive line, you're not going to be effective. He's not going to be as effective, and everybody's going to get criticized in the process. So I think that you have to have the right offensive line, and then you have to have the right guys to carry the rock. But the fact is, you might not have a guy that makes first team all pro at running back, but it's rare to find the kind of guy like Austin Eckler who does it all in one package and is basically single, the only single guy that you pay attention to in the backfield. Nowadays with offenses, and you look even at the Lions with the way that they changed their style, Williams was their guy that got all the touchdowns, that was the smash mouth football guy. And the kid from Georgia, Swift, was the guy that they used a little bit more in the passing game, moved around, was more athletic and shifty. I think most teams will tell you, just based on the fact that you can find guys with the right offensive line that can get you 4 yards a carry, do what you need to do. That's why teams shifted their attention to when and how you bring running backs into the system.
Yeah, I think that this offensive line would be good enough if you had decent
quarterback play. Well,
yeah,
because Kenyon Green can't pass block, but he can run block.
Yeah, I think this offensive line is capable enough to be a good pass blocking
team. I wasn't saying that, and by the way.
Right, I didn't think you were.
No, but I'm saying, but other teams that are looking for like this home run answer at running back, damn well better have an offensive line, too. Otherwise, it doesn't matter how good Bijan Robinson is.
7593, considering running back is one of the few positions that don't have any great question marks, Bijan would be a luxury pick, and there are more pressing matters to address with the Houston Texans, for sure. Here's a history, by the way, just the last few years. I don't know how far we'll go back on this, of running backs that were taken in the first round. Because, look, I think Bijan Robinson's a great player. I think Bijan Robinson's going to be fantastic in the NFL. I'm not touching a running back with the number 12 overall pick whenever this team has so many other holes to fill. I would even argue that Bijan Robinson could be the most productive pick for 2023. But in terms of like a long-term plan, I don't want to think about paying a running back whenever the rest of my team is lousy down the road. 2021, there wasn't a first-round running back drafted last year. Breece Hall was just outside of the first round, drafted early second, had a good rookie year until he got hurt. 2021, the two rookie running backs that were drafted in the first round, Najee Harris, who was thought of as a pretty can't miss, and like he's been okay in Pittsburgh.
Their line was pretty bad.
Yeah, but their line's been bad, but he's been like, all right, like he's been okay. He hasn't changed the tide of that offense. Travis Etienne in Jacksonville, again, a good player. Now he got hurt before he could ever play in a regular season game in his rookie year, but that's another guy that didn't change the tide of that offense in Jacksonville. You go back to 2020, the first running back, the only running back taken in the first round was Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who many people thought, oh my goodness, Clyde Edwards-Helaire in this Kansas City offense, he's going to be awesome. Louis Riddick flat out said he was going to win the MVP in his rookie year, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire is now third on the Kansas City depth chart behind Pacheco, who they just drafted in the sixth round, and Jerick McKinnon, who they brought in free agency.
Pacheco, sixth round.
Sixth round.
Listen to that and understand that this is where the NFL is for a reason. You can find guys that if they're just, you know, they're really athletic and they understand the position, you can get them all over the country because regardless of everything else, it's like we talk about the difference between Alabama and Ohio State and other, especially as it relates to quarterbacks. When you look at it from a running back position, there are guys that can run the rock all over the country. But are they getting enough exposure? I mean, are they playing with the right players? There are guys that are going to say, well, you didn't play at a high enough level to take on really top-notch defenses. If you can hit the hole and you can hit it quickly and you can do the kind of things that running backs do and you can do it on a level that you think is equivalent to the NFL or you test out like you can and you show it in training camp, you can find a place in the NFL where you can gain yards and you can be effective. Pacheco's an example. Aaron Jones is an example. Guys that are doing it more and more these days, coming out later in the draft, but being more effective earlier in their careers.
Big C said only because of injury with I think he's talking about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but I'm not 100% sure, but I think he's talking about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Clyde Edwards-Helaire got in the doghouse because he was putting the ball on the ground like
fumbling
from day
all
one.
The time.
So even before injury, there was like, he's not being great for us. Go back a few more years. 2019, Josh Jacobs was the lone first-round running back. And look, Jacobs has been pretty good. He's been pretty good with the Raiders. Had a really good year this year. What did Las Vegas do this past offseason, this last offseason, not this current offseason? They didn't give Josh Jacobs the fifth-year option because they didn't want to spend money on Josh Jacobs.
And partly
spend money
probably
on a running
because
back.
They believe that they can go out and get another guy and draft another guy if their line is good enough to get the yards necessary to keep the offense moving without having to pay the exorbitant amount of money that Jacobs is going to command on the open market, and some team's going to be dumb enough to pay him.
18 was Saquon Barkley. He got drafted second overall, and Saquon Barkley's been a difference maker for the Giants, but to what extent? And he had
couldn't
the injury.
Stay on the field.
And now they're looking at paying him huge money. Like, I wouldn't want to be paying a running back huge money.
He said he doesn't want to reset the dollars for the position, but I think part of it is he probably, you know, at a certain point you feel a little guilty that you've made the money that you made when hardly playing on the field, and you like the setup in New York. Your best friend is the quarterback that, you know, you guys are both in a similar situation and you played really good this last year. So I believe him when he says he's one of those guys that can talk to his agent and say, look, I'm not trying to break the bank per se and be the highest paid running back in the game. Yes, I want to be paid and paid, you know, fairly well, but I also believe I want to do the right thing for the team because they were paying him for not playing for a majority of his first contract.
Yeah, I mean, you just go throughout the years. A lot of people, I had this debate on Twitter a little bit. They were mentioning Christian McCaffrey. What did Christian McCaffrey do for the Panthers? And then Christian McCaffrey got traded to San Francisco this year. Do you realize without a first round draft pick? Like they put together a big package, like second, third, fourth, fifth. They basically traded at their entire draft capital with the exception of a first round pick. But a guy that you drafted in the top 10 at the running back spot didn't really change your organization. And then you traded away in a few years before you had to pay him even more money or continue paying him big money for less than a first-round draft pick. Leonard Fournette. Like, people looked at Leonard Fournette as this can't-miss running back out of LSU. What did he do with Jacksonville? Like, people said, well, he won a Super Bowl. Not for Jacksonville.
He ate a lot.
Not for Jacksonville.
No, he got ate a lot. He got disgruntled. He sat on the bench and laughed and ate popcorn. At Reliant Stadium, when it was Reliant Stadium, and got his way out of town. He won a Super Bowl, but he also won a Super Bowl as a totally different makeup of a running back, thanks to Tom Brady.
And then look at just the last few Super Bowl champions, too, because this is something that I always like to go to. It's like, okay, Bijan Robinson at number 12. It makes sense. Well, how does it make sense? Tell me how it makes sense. Kansas City, this past, you know, they just won the Super Bowl. They were doing it with a six-rounder and a free agent, Pacheco and McKinnon. Was Akers healthy for the Rams when they won it 2 years ago?
I think he was.
Not a first-rounder. Now, he was a second, so decent draft capital, but not a first-rounder. Tampa Bay had Leonard Fournette, who they picked up from us. They were his second team. Kansas City in 2020, that was even before they had Clyde Edwards-Helaire. The Patriots in 19 have always done it by committee. The Eagles in 18, in 17, I'm saying the wrong year because of the day that was played, but you get my point here. Mm-hmm. The Eagles did it by committee. The Patriots did it by committee. The Broncos did it by committee. The Patriots did it by committee. The last Super Bowl champion that had a bell cow was Marshawn Lynch, and that was in 2013. So, like, the whole notion, oh, go get that running back. He's going to change the offense. It's going to be a completely different look for the Houston Texans. It might be better. It's going to be better. But are you in a spot with the Texans who have, let's just say, 20 holes to fill and they're starting 22, 11 on each side of the ball, where if you go Bijan Robinson, maybe he makes you better next year than drafting, you know, an edge rusher that slides to number 12. But in terms of the long-term interest of this team, not wanting to draft rookie running backs in the first round, not wanting to pay running backs their first big contract, I just don't understand how this could be a sound way to build the Houston Texans up from the ground where it's currently at.
Again, if it's a luxury pick like we talked about with the Eagles, who ended up making some shrewd moves to have a high draft pick and a Super Bowl roster, you can afford the luxury of taking him and taking a flyer or, you know, however you want to position it. You take a guy because you're in a position of having all your needs filled at almost every other position. If you're the Texans and you look at all the different areas that you could just go, they need someone there. They need someone there. Your roster is so depleted and so not the Philadelphia Eagles that you can't afford a luxury pick of taking your second running back when you don't have a first pass rusher, when you don't have some of the first that you need, like a wide receiver one for your long-term future. You don't have what you need way more than having the second running back to be very, very good in your backfield. It's not the right move for this franchise.
713-780-ESPN. Can you make any sense of Bijan at 12, or does it belong on Bad Take Boulevard? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees have been making mock drafts great again. Speaking of Bijan, speaking of the number 12 pick of the NFL draft, let's make mock drafts great again. This one from USA Today. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Are you ready to make some mock drafts great again? Way to really sell it.
Sure.
People just changed the station right there. 7855, I agree that you cannot take a running back at 12. Too many needs, but if he were to drop significantly, not likely, at what point would you be willing to take Bijan?
So what was the...
12's too high, but what's the earliest you would take him? Let's say from a Texans perspective.
From a Texans perspective, it's different than a lot of other teams.
Would you take him with the first pick in the second?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
I think my answer is no.
I still too early for me, yeah.
See, I it's not that it's too early for me. It's that I like Damian Pierce, and I would rather try to get like a thunder lightning thing here going and go for the other Texas running back, the one from A&M. Give me A-Chain.
It's like you were listening to our last segment.
Yeah, really.
I was. I know. I was going.
If, in fact, you were
and
here.
Actually, I actually like Roschon, too. I don't know how high he's going to go. He was really good when he was in for Bijan.
I've seen him going as high as like the third, fourth round.
I think a lot of people like project him as a good running back, and he was just kind of held back by the school and by being behind Bijan.
One of the things why I have to say yes to that too is because I believe in competition, and I believe you're not using a first round pick, and I believe that, like I said with the quarterbacks with the old Patriots way, even if you do have a franchise type quarterback, if you take another one, or you're uncertain, or you're trying to figure out, you know, if this guy could be the next guy after the guy you have, there's always value for them. So if you have two stud running backs, and at a certain point you think you only should have one of them on your roster, you could still probably find a home for them with another team. In the case of Pierce, you'll probably get way more than a fourth-round pick for him if he continues to perform at the level he did a year ago. And you can still get your value out of them. So I think that from all that everybody says about the talent level of Bijan Robinson and what he can actually do, for as good as Pierce was, if you feel like Robinson is better and you get him again on, you know, on the first year of his first contract, then I think you explore it, because that means that you take the best player on the board. If he falls to that level of the second pick in the second round, then you're getting a value pick.
I'd be intrigued if you take him at 12. I'd be intrigued if you take him first pick at the second. I'm just not drafting a running back that early. And I like the idea of pairing Damian Pierce up with somebody else. I want a guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield. Have you watched much Roshan at UT? Has he shown the ability to be a good receiver out of the backfield? Because I haven't seen a whole lot of that.
I feel like that was mostly Bijan doing
that. Yeah, exactly. That's like the one question I have with Roshan that I need to be answered if he's that pick. Because if not, I just have two power running backs.
Yeah, I don't mind them getting a running back later in the draft, and there's your thunder and lightning possibilities. I do just think that you do need two running backs. You've seen that in the NFL, no matter who it is and what year we're talking about, just like when you recapped the Super Bowl. But forget the Super Bowl champions. Just look at successful teams in the league. At a certain point, someone's getting dinged up. Someone's going to take an injury you hope isn't season-ending, but the season doesn't end for the rest of the team, and you need someone else that can pick up where they left off. And that's why you've seen when the Todd Gurleys go down or the other running backs go down, you've got to have another running back ready to go that knows the system, that's gotten some carries, that could pick up at least the slack, if not where he left off. And so I don't disagree you need another running back. It depends on how you value him. I know they're taking best player available, you know, in every pick, or that's what we want him to do.
Yeah.
But if Bijan slides to the second pick in the second round, you got to consider.
I mean, I wouldn't be mad at it. It's hard for me to do it. But I'm also of the mindset that I want a running back with the first pick of the fourth round, the first pick that you have. I think that's the perfect spot to take that complimentary piece for Damian Pierce. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line. Let's go out there for Lamont. Lamont, you're in the high for the Killer Bees. What's up?
Hey, Jeremy, Joe, man, I agree with you guys about picking running backs early from recency bias of what's going on. But I think the unintended consequences is if we got this mindset that no, we can't take no running backs early, and I'm not advocating for no taking no running backs. You're gonna find all of the running backs with the good, all of the premier running backs coming out of the league, coming out of college with the good teams. But I understand what everybody is saying, that, you know, you pay these running backs, they fall off. You draft these running backs early, they don't produce. But it's some of these running backs out there, man, that I really believe that can go early. I'm not even arguing about I'm not even debating about Bijan Robinson in particular. I'm just talking about the whole mindset now. You're just pushing all of the good players down to the end. But one last thing, Jeremy. I find it very interesting that you in the state of Texas, and you just said that you really didn't see Roshan Robinson, but you did follow Levis in Kentucky. That's all I have, folks.
Appreciate it, Lamont. I said I haven't seen a whole lot of Roshan Johnson catch the ball out of the backfield. I've seen a decent amount of Texas games. As far as Will Levis, I studied Will Levis.
Well, you had too much time on Saturdays, and you should be utilizing it better to see more Texas football.
I mean, I haven't seen Roshan Johnson be great catching the football out of the backfield. That's not to say he's incapable of doing it. I haven't seen every Texas offensive snap, admittedly. I haven't. I have seen every single one of Kentucky's offensive snaps the last 2 years, and the reason that I have is because I've studied the quarterbacks in this draft. I've made it a point of priority because the Texans need a quarterback.
You know what the Texans need, and at that position, that's why you're doing your homework on them, as opposed to, we know the Texans really don't need a running back one, but if you're in a position where a guy falls to you at a certain point, or you're looking for insurance and another running back to help take the load off of Pierce so he doesn't get dinged up. Later in the draft, you can do that.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I've watched every snap of Levis, because I made it a point that I'm going to watch every snap of Will Levis, just like I made it a point to watch every snap of Bryce Young. Just like I haven't watched every snap of C.J. Stroud. I'm in the process of doing that, and I haven't seen every snap of Anthony Richardson. I'm in the process of doing that. I was watching some Anthony Richardson yesterday, though, by the way. Buyer beware. I'm terrified of Anthony Richardson.
He's 2 years away from being.
I don't even think he's 2 years away. Playing. I think he's in. I don't think he's capable of being a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Like, Malik Willis?
Why? What did you see? Is it accuracy?
I mean, it was the same. I mean, I gave you the analogy the other day. If you just go watch a pickup game and you have a dude take 5 3-pointers and 2 of those 3-pointers he doesn't hit rim, that dude can't play. Like, you just have the feel that that guy is not going to be trusted to make a bunch of shots. Anthony Richardson makes some of the worst decisions I've ever seen. He has some of the worst accuracy I've ever seen. Yes, he's the size. Yes, he has all the athleticism. Yes, he has a howitzer for an arm. He has all of those things, and he's going to make 2 or 3 or 4 highlight plays every single game that people are going to blast on Twitter and be like, oh, look at this skill set. He reminds me of Josh Allen. But he makes about 5 other throws where you're like, okay, that's an interceptable pass. Or that's a ball that's 5 yards behind his receiver. Or that's a ball that's 10 yards over the head of his intended target. I think Anthony Richardson is way too mistake-prone and way too inaccurate to be a capable starter in the NFL. I wouldn't touch Anthony Richardson.
Now, you don't think that that's fixable?
Accuracy? Missing dudes by 10 yards? No,
they
I don't.
They say that even Brady made changes to his mechanics so that he could make tighter throws into smaller windows. Like, look, and I'm not saying that because I don't know personally.
Brady completed 62% of his passes in college, though. Anthony Richardson completed less than 55%.
And that's fair. That's what I'm saying. I don't know for a fact that is the case. I think, like, our quarterback gurus of the past that we used to work with could probably break this down better for us. But I'm curious if with some mechanical breakdown and literally breaking it down and reteaching the throwing motion, could you become a more accurate passer?
Sure. I don't think it's going to be accurate enough, though, to be a starting. Now, let me walk back the starting quarterback in the NFL. Because I think with a talent like Anthony Richardson, you can cater an offense to his skill set.
Like Baltimore and Lamar when he came
out. I think that's what you would have to do. Like Philadelphia, like people say, oh, you can do like what Steichen did with Philadelphia with Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts was a pretty accurate thrower of the ball.
And there were guys like Steve Young asking, I don't know what you did in the last 12 months. But that's why I'm asking the question, because something was done to where he became a entirely different quarterback in terms of his accuracy level and his ability.
But even Jalen completed 65% of passes in college. Richardson was less than 55.
But again, we talk about in college, in both programs he was at, he had guys that were distancing themselves on a pretty consistent play-by-play basis.
You don't think they had that at Florida?
They used to have
not
it
not to
Florida.
The point of Bama, but Florida was ranked number 13 in the country this year at certain points.
Right, but I just think there's a difference between what Florida recruits right now and what Alabama's recruiting right now.
I would agree with that. But Florida, I mean, let's not pretend like Florida doesn't have good talent.
I'm just saying that when the throws that Jalen made even in the Super Bowl, the two that come to mind
He's improved tremendously.
I mean, are to the tight end where I was like, oh my God. Like
Jalen's thing, though, out of college wasn't necessarily his accuracy. It was more that he had a noodle arm.
Like, I thought it was his accuracy as well.
His accuracy was great. I mean, 65% in college, 69% coming out of Oklahoma.
But how much of that was, you know, swing
short
passes,
check
down?
And, yeah.
Okay, you don't think option. Florida does that? Florida does that.
No, I'm not saying Anthony Richardson's is a huge problem. Like, and honestly, I think he's going to go top 10 and it's because of Jalen Hurts. People always do this in the NBA and the NFL. They see one person fix one problem, and then it just starts this, like, just snowball effect where everyone's like, well, if I can fix Anthony Richardson, he's a better athlete than Justin Fields and Jalen Hurts. Like, how good can he be? But in reality, a lot of these guys aren't fixable.
Like, to me, and I didn't – Jalen Hurts' deep ball was always, too, where he caught a lot, especially in college. He just threw it up as far as he could throw it. And he had I don't know about noodle arm. I thought he had a strong enough arm where he just threw it up and guys ran underneath it. But now when you look at it, you see a guy that's been able to fix it, a guy that's been able to get more accurate. You're right that, look, it's going to steamroll some things. But I've said all along about Richardson, from what I've seen, like you said, measurables, athleticism, it's all there. But I think he's a 2-year project before he even sniffs a team giving him the opportunity to start in the NFL.
At minimum, he's a 2-year project. And that's best case scenario.
And that means, like, you got to go through all these things that are going to be painful for you. You're getting paid for it now. But they're going to have to break down your throwing motion. They're going to have to work on things. And you're going to have to do some things that you're not going to be real comfortable and your ego's not going to be comfortable with because you think you're already there. But on the next level, if you don't do those things, you're never going to be a consistent starting quarterback in the league.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's get to this Nate Davis mock. Nate the Great, as we make mock drafts great again. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Texter 2568, don't like Richardson, but look at Burrow's progression in college as well. Burrow is a first-year starter at LSU when he was a junior, completed 58% of his passes, 16 touchdowns, 5 picks. Not anything to write home about. Kind of similar to Richardson's year, somewhat similar, although Richardson was under 55%. The difference is Burrow was unbelievable in his final year. Like, Burrow was incredible. So are you predicting that Anthony Richardson's going to turn into what Joe Burrow became in his final year at LSU? I don't think so. And I didn't watch Joe Burrow much as a junior, so I don't know if that his mistakes were the same mistakes as Anthony Richardson, where he was missing guys by 10 yards. I would doubt it, though. I would doubt that Joe Burrow was missing guys by 10 yards.
No, I think when you look at Burrow and the reason why that he was so highly touted, no matter where he was and which team was making a decision to pass on him or keep him, in the case of Burrow, you know, you realize the talent is there. And you realize that it's the intangibles, the measurables and everything else, and his ability to not only throw deep, but to throw into tight windows and to make the right decisions. And that's why the major programs in college football were chomping at the bit to get him. Now, Richardson played at Florida, sure, but Richardson, you know, in terms of making the same throws, I don't see it. If you put Richardson at LSU that year, there was a ton of talent around Joe Burrow, but Joe Burrow also made a hell of a lot of difficult throws to get them through some difficult situations. I don't believe, and especially from what you're telling me, and we've had Florida fans texting us the same thing, they're happy that he's moved on because he's not capable of making the same kind of throws Burrow made, no matter what his completion percentage was.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN 2611. As a Florida fan, I was so happy when Richardson decided to go pro. He can't hit the broadside of a barn. Overrated. That's from a Gator fan. I've watched four or five Richardson games from this past season. Utah game, I thought he was like good, but there are still some throws where I'm like, oh man, I'm not sure this is an NFL quarterback. Like, if people want to compare Richardson to Levis, because a lot of people do. A lot of people think Levis is as raw as Richardson, which is a wild take, and it shows me that you've watched neither one of these guys on a regular basis, quite frankly. Go watch that game. Go watch Florida-Kentucky 2022, second game of the season for both teams. Go watch that game. Go watch that game and see who you
decide who you pick.
Go watch that game. That's all. Just do that.
We were talking about it during the break, and I forget on Twitch who said it, but the fact is if you're Richardson and there's any kind of chance at all, Cranberry Jelly said it. I mean, if there's any chance of you going high or top 15 in the NFL draft or even first round, you probably shouldn't test out. You know, even with your pro day is one thing because you can make throws to guys who aren't being defended and you can just show off your arm strength and your athleticism and test out that way. Other than that, at the combine and everything else, I'm not throwing. I might not even run.
I think I would throw if I'm Richardson, but are you talking about Richardson?
Yeah.
I wouldn't run if I'm Richardson. I think that's a great call by the Twitcher. Yep. I think I would throw because, like, that's a controlled environment. Now, if you fail at this, then, like, not a great look. But I trust that any quarterback can throw against air. Like, sure. I trust that any
that's
quarterback can
you
throw the route
against air.
When
you create a tight window, that's an entirely different scenario that it could completely deflate your value.
Yeah, but they're not doing that at the combine, though. Like, they're throwing the route
tree.
I would throw if I'm Richardson at the combine. I definitely would, because you can showcase your arm. It's a controlled environment. You're not feeling any pressure. You're not feeling a rush. I would throw. I wouldn't run. 713-780-ESPN. Let's make mock drafts great again. This one's from Nate the Great. Nate the Great Davis, USA Today. He has the Chicago Bears, Joe George, taking Jalen Carter. You cool with Jalen Carter, number one overall?
Yeah, definitely.
Me too. I have a Carter number one ticket, so I'd be very cool with that. So the Texans in this one take Bryce Young at number two. Okay. First quarterback off the board, Texans take Bryce Young at number two. Will Anderson falls to Jonathan Gannon. He gets his defensive end off the edges as they take Anderson at number three. C.J. Stroud goes to the Colts and Shane Steichen at number four. And then the fifth pick's Tyree Wilson again. It's like the third time we've seen Tyree Wilson making mock drafts great again. They have him going number five to Seattle out of Texas Tech. The other quarterbacks, Richardson goes number eight to Atlanta. Will Levis goes number nine to Carolina. Quentin Johnson comes off the board at number 11. Just something to consider. Bijan Robinson, who we've been tracking along for our Longhorn friends that are out there, he falls to number 27 to Buffalo in this mock draft. Now the
they're ecstatic, by the way, if he falls to them.
Absolutely. They've been looking for a running back. I don't think he gets there. They also drafted a running back last year in the second, James Cook, Dalvin Cook's brother, who I think is going to be pretty good. He came on a little bit second half of the year.
But they're another team with a lot of luxury picks that they can make because they're so deep and talented, where they can afford to take yet another running back, just like the Eagles, whereas other teams can't. Like, I think if Richardson goes to Atlanta, that's the kind of pick, no matter what you've done with Kyle Pitts and drafting receivers and trying to rebuild that entire franchise, that's a pick that could derail the entire thing. That could absolutely blow everything up.
Yeah, you're right. But if it's boom or bust. I mean, Richardson's boom or bust. Like, I could be terribly wrong, and he could be Cam Newton and win an MVP and lead a team to a Super Bowl. We've been playing the game where we know who's taking it to in these mocks. Bryce Young is the number two pick for the Houston Texans, according to Nate the Great Davis of USA Today. We see who the Texans take the next three picks, and then we're deciding who the Texans should take at number 12. He hasn't taken Michael Mayer, the tight end out of Notre Dame. So that's the pick at 12 with his mock. The next one, he has the Jets taking Paris Johnson, the tackle from Ohio State. At 14, he has the Patriots taking wide receiver Jordan Addison from USC. And then at 15, he has Green Bay taking defensive back Brian Branch, who looks more like a safety, maybe nickel corner in the NFL from Alabama. So you're Nick Caserio. You've already drafted Bryce Young at number 2. Bryce Young has been the pick. You're sitting there on the clock at number 12, and you have the option of one of these four. Michael Mayer, tight end Notre Dame, Paris Johnson, tackle Ohio State, Jordan Addison, receiver USC, or Brian Branch, defensive back Alabama.
I take Branch out of the equation. Now, I just feel like that second pick is going to remain on the offensive side of the ball to give whatever you can to Bryce Young, and especially because it's Bryce Young. So I'm either going to get an offensive lineman, a tight end, or a wide receiver. And if I do that, I think that the way that the NFL and their pass-happy offenses have been, as much as you need a wide receiver one, you need a very, very reliable, talented tight end, which the Texans obviously don't have. And because of the fact that, like I said, you've helped convince me there might not be a wide receiver one in this draft, and there's a multitude of receivers that you can get with that second pick in the second round, I think I stick with Mayer on this in this case, because you don't know what you're going to do with Tunsil, but you have the opportunity to lock him up and keep him. And he's at left tackle, and you've got Howard at right. And so the tackle position to me is not something where you need to draft offensive line again 2 years in a row. I think it's got to be a skill position. In this case, because of the lack of slam dunk wide receiver one talent in the draft, I'll take Mayer and I'll stick with what the draft said.
Nate the Great. Nate the Great from USA Today. How you feeling about this one, Joe George? You get the option.
Yep.
One of those four. Which way are you leaning?
I like Mayer a lot, but I'm going Jordan Addison.
Okay.
I think he's a really special player.
And so you think he can be a wide receiver one?
I do.
Do you need wide receiver one, though? Like, even if you know he's not wide receiver one, but you don't feel like Michael Mayer is tight end one, and you think Addison can help an offense more than Mayer,
I think Michael Mayer could be tight end one.
Okay. Well, that changes, like, that's... But what if you think he's not? Like, I don't think you need to guarantee yourself, like, a tight end one, wide receiver one. Like, to me, you take the best player, period.
See, at 12, that high in a draft, I think that that's where you have to guarantee you're going to get not only the best position player that you're in that position you're drafting in the draft, but I think you got to get a guy that transcends time for you in terms of you don't have to worry about that position and having a stud there for the foreseeable future. I think Mayer is that guy. I mean, I've heard so many different names thrown about at 12 that I don't think that there is that guy. But if Mayer's a guy that can block and catch and he's athletic and he can do all these things, and we know how the tight end position has evolved and we've seen it recently, that's why I'm leaning more that way.
Look, I'm taking Mayer over Addison here too, and we'll get to you real quick, Joe. Like, I'll eliminate Paris Johnson because I don't want to go offensive lineman. I think the offensive line's good enough. I don't want a safety slash nickelback at number 12 in Brian Branch, and I like Mayer more than Addison, especially because I think I can get a wide receiver with the first pick of the second pretty good too. But this is more of a conversation of, like, what if the Texans value wide receiver two more than tight end one? Like, yeah, it's the second wide receiver versus the first tight end, but if they think wide receiver two is more of a factor than tight end one, then take the best available
player. But is Metchie capable of being wide receiver two?
Maybe, but who cares if you have two of those guys? Like, that's still a very efficient offense.
You still have Nico Collins until you decide to move on.
I think we're both kind of out of Nico Collins. All right, Joe, what were you saying?
No, I just think that I look back to, you know, Addison, what he did in Pittsburgh with Kenny Pickett. And I know he had a better year that year than he did this year at USC. He was banged up a little bit. I think there's a really good player there, honestly. Like, I just, to me, if he doesn't get hurt, I think there's a good chance he blows these expectations out of the water, and he's clearly the number one guy, and that's why he's fallen a little bit. But also, I just think the tight end position is more replaceable. There's more above replacement guys than there are not. Like, yes, there's only one Travis Kelce, and then there's Mark Andrews is probably the next guy.
Kittle,
yeah. And then, like, after those three, maybe Darren Waller, when he's healthy, you want to put him in that category. And then the drop-off is massive.
Yeah.
But look what the Texans did this year. They got consistent tight end production from Brevin Jordan, Akins, O.J. Howard. Like, it didn't matter.
Consistent?
Like,
they got average.
As a team, they had tight ends contribute to this offense, where I think there's more, like, you can just get a guy.
So you're looking at it more from a transactional, how do I bring certain players into the fold, and where am I getting value, like, point of view, which is fair. I like to look at it more because I think that there's a decent chance the Texans go wide receiver, tight end, or tight end, wide receiver. And I like what it looks like if I go tight end, wide receiver than if I go wide receiver, tight end. Like, I'd rather go Michael Mayer with the number 12 pick and get Zay Flowers with the first, second round pick. And I like my team more than the other team, than Jordan Addison and, let's say, Musgrave from Oregon State. Like, would you rather have Mayer and Flowers, or would you rather have Addison and Musgrave? I rather have Mayer and Flowers than the opposite.
I'm
looking at it more from, okay, if I do go tight end or receiver at 12, now I'm talking about drafting the position I didn't focus on at number 12 with the first pick of the second round, and I like tight end receiver combinations more than I like wide receiver tight end combinations.
No, I would agree with that. And I think that, look, if you talk about just weighing in as you're going through the draft, all the things and the factors that you put into play is, well, how deep is the position? We know the wide receiver is deep this year, and the tight end, there's three guys.
Yeah, I don't think there's a drop-off that much from number 12 wide receiver versus first pick of the second round wide receiver.
That's where I was going, too. Mm-hmm. And we talked about putting everything in tiers. So as we kind of peel back the curtain in terms of how teams go about this, if you look at the tiers, you say there are three guys at tight end and then everybody else. But you look at wide receiver, and whether you believe they're wide receiver one capable or not, you believe that they're all bunched up with the same typical number associated with them in terms of the ratings for how they test out, and you take that and say, well, there's probably 10 of them that you could have in play by the time you draft with the second pick of the second round. So you're either going to get one of the three tight ends, or you're going to you have all these different wide receivers to choose from. And if you don't think there's a slam dunk guy above everybody else on a different level or two, then you know someone's going to be there for you that enhances your wide receiver room. But you can get one of the top three tight ends in this draft and completely take what, even if you take what Joe's saying is true, where each guy made contributions, but they weren't earth-shattering. They made them average at tight end at best. Because O.J. Howard caught a couple touchdowns, but he didn't do a whole hell of a lot else, right? So you look at it and go, okay, if I can get one of the top three tight ends, and I know this guy's going to be with me for the long haul, and he's capable of being a productive tight end in this league, I'll still get a wide receiver with the second pick of the second round. I'll be just fine.
713-780-ESPN at HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Our Mailbag Monday coming up at the top of the hour. If you have questions for the Killer Bees, you can ask us anything that comes your way at 2. But coming up next, what's worse, the NBA All-Star Weekend or whatever the NFL put together? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
What was worse, NBA All-Star Weekend or whatever it was that was put together by the NFL? Elfrid Payton, by the way. He did go to Louisiana Lafayette.
Okay.
We were talking. Blankers and I started talking about old players in the NBA.
Well, but we were going about a former Cougars. Yeah. It was like reunion weekend with all the former Cougars there yesterday. And I was wondering how many of them were still playing somewhere and or in the NBA G League.
Yeah. And for some reason, we started talking about Elfrid Payton. Oh, yeah, because I thought Dejon could be like an Elfrid Payton.
Yep.
And Payton was the number 10 pick of the draft out of Louisiana Lafayette to Philly. And then bounce around. Never lived up to any sort of fruition. But what's worse, NBA All-Star Weekend or whatever the NFL did?
What do you mean the NFL did? Is that what you're going to call the XFL?
No, 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 no. They're all star. They're Pro Bowl thing. The flag football, skills competition.
The NBA is better than the Pro Bowl, and that's not saying much. I think that if you don't have Mac McClung, thank God you didn't have last year's dunk contest. It might be the worst in the history of dunk contests.
You know how many NBA games Mac McClung has played in his career?
Four.
Two. He's played two NBA games in his life.
They were going to let him represent the G League in the dunk contest, like they did with G League players in the Rising Stars, because Scoot Henderson played in the Rising Stars and a couple other guys. But they were going to let him be in the dunk contest representing his G League team, and then Daryl and the Sixers signed him. But, my God, that kid has hops. And so I think that his dunks were legit. They were off the charts. They saved the dunk contest. Even the three-point contest has lost its luster, and it's getting very gimmicky instead of just showcasing the best pure shooters in the game. And the game last night, I was one of the guys that used to say, I can't turn it off because I still see unbelievable basketball plays by the best basketball players on the planet. They were going half speed most of the time. It was all threes and alley-oops. It was excruciatingly painful to watch. And I ended up turning on the XFL game, which was a close game in the second half. And it was far more entertaining than anything that the NBA All-Star game put out there. So I think that the NBA has to revisit a lot of stuff because the skills competition. If you can't throw a freaking chest pass and a bounce pass through a hole the size of a cement mixer, then what are we doing?
I watched almost none of either. If I'm being completely honest, the NFL skills thing, the only thing I watched was the quarterback competition, which like that one's kind of
cool.
Yeah, that one's pretty fun. I want to see what Anthony Richardson looks like doing that. But that one's fun. I didn't watch any of the – actually, I watched a couple of the golf swings and the long drive contest, which why are NFL players having a long drive contest and then they're putting it on television? I thought that was kind of weak. But those are the only two things I saw.
Because golf is like paddleball. It's sweeping the nation. I mean pickleball.
And I didn't see any of the flag football game. I saw none of it. Like maybe a couple of highlights.
Bit of it because I thought it was already over and it was still going on. Like even I love the Rising Stars Challenge because I'd like to see, you know, some of the young second year players take on the rookies and have that truly be a showcase. But now you're doing it like a mini bracket tournament and they're like mini games and they're using the Elam ending and they're, you know, short games and you don't see them for that long. And I'm just going.
I have a hot take about the Elam ending. I think the Elam ending is better than the current basketball ending, but I wouldn't change NBA or college.
You screw up right now what was one of the things that people look forward to watching because it was legit basketball, because the younger players are still trying to prove themselves and showcase themselves. They don't want to be shown up by the second years, don't want to be shown up by the rookies. Rookies want to make sure that they establish themselves playing well against the highest picks of the first round of the year before. That game had some kind of cachet to people would watch it.
I'll still go NBA All-Star Weekend more than the NFL.
Sure.
Thing. Now, both are bad. Let's be very clear. And like I said, I didn't watch much of either one. NBA All-Star Weekend, the only thing that I watched was the slam dunk contest. I watched it on DVR after I already knew that Mac McClung won. I saw it on Twitter that he won. I wanted to go back and watch the dunks anyways because I think it's fun. And I was worried that Mac McClung was going to be like this how do I say it? You know, remember when Spud Webb won the NBA championship or the slam dunk contest?
He just won it because
he was short.
A short guy doing things that you're not supposed to be able to do.
He won it because he was short. Because he could dunk a basketball by being short. Whenever I saw that Mac McClung won, I hadn't seen any of the dunk highlights yet. So I went into it kind of blind, knowing that Mac won. I was scared that he won it because he was short and white. Watching it, not the case. Like, Mac McClung was a deserving winner.
Those dunks were all world.
He was awesome. He was really good. Now, should he have been in the dunk contest? That's something else to talk about maybe a little bit later.
But to where it's gotten to how you get into the dunk contest, the greats of the greats, you're never going to see the Dominiques and the Michael Jordans and all the greats of the game. Now, Zion said he's thinking about it, and if he does it, he'll do it next year. Well, that's because people are really looking at you as a bust that's collecting a whole lot of money, and you need to kind of redo your brand. But John Morant, basically, has found no need to do it, and he did what he needed to do in the All-Star game to prove he can dunk.
Both games stink. Flag football for NFL Pro Bowler stinks. The NBA All-Star game stinks. Some of the skills competition is like where this argument's going to be won. I still put the slam dunk contest and the three-point shooting contest over anything that the NFL does. So that's why I lean NBA All-Star Weekend, even though I don't think NBA All-Star Weekend is anything what it used to be.
No, I agree. And Joe, I know you want to get in here. My big thing is I would say that the quarterback passing skill competition is equivalent to either the three-point contest or the dunk contest, but that's all the NFL really has that's really intriguing. And then when you look at it from the NBA perspective, I think they've muddled up and mucked up the three-point contest, if it's just the greatest shooters in the world, show that they can get around five racks of balls, get all the shots off, get the bonus ball, one bonus ball on each rack, and let the best man win. But now you've got one rack of bonus balls, and you've got two glow-in-the-dark balls, and you've got all these gimmicks that you don't need.
They went away from the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid.
And that's what everybody was drawn to, because that's what everybody watched in All-Star Weekend, because it legitimately was basketball skill that translated.
And the thing with the game itself, which is so interesting, is that, like, I get why they don't play the Pro Bowl when it was a contact game to full ability. You know, you put a long season, these guys, concussions, just body wear and tear. But it was like 2 years ago when they introduced the Elam ending. They played hard in the fourth quarter. These guys don't even care.
No, I don't blame them either. Like, what is the incentive to play hard?
Well, and they tried to make money a motivational factor. The guys get extra cash, and a big chunk of cash goes to charity. But even still, in each quarter, they tune it up for the final minute of play when they hopefully have kept it close. And so it really has lost everything that it once had in terms of being something that everybody wanted to see ever.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was watching Shaq and Michael highlights from an All-Star game the other day. It was crazy watching that game because, like, Michael and Shaq are going at the other conference. Like, they're going to murder someone. And it was like, what could have been if Shaq would have, you know, defected and gone to the Bulls instead of the Lakers? It's just, this doesn't have any of
or
that.
Or the, no. Like, they showed highlights of the Madison Square Garden one where it was Kobe's first All-Star game.
Yeah.
And Kobe was trying to send a message, and Jordan ended up with the MVP.
Awesome.
And it's like, and they had him mic'd up. Like, that's what you crave, what you want to see, what you're never going to see anymore.
I even saw ESPN yesterday put out a short video of, like, Jaylen Brown versus Jason Tatum one-on-one. And Jason Tatum puts zero effort into the play. Yep. And it's like, there's this idea. Yeah, it would be cool to see these two great basketball players that are on the same team go head-to-head, but they don't try.
See, I don't like honestly, that either.
See, but it was fun.
I think they should just cancel it.
That was a fun element of it last night. They did end up going back and forth a little bit and yuck it up. What I didn't like more was when Tatum got a dunk or did what LeBron did, LeBron rubbed his back of his head and yucked it up there, too. That doesn't tell me that they're trying to be competitively going at each other.
I want to see the old East and West, to be honest.
Yeah,
I would agree with that.
Give me the East and West and put them back in their jerseys.
Like, and by the way, can we kibosh the whole draft? The draft took an hour last night.
That's what I'm saying, East and West. Get rid of all of that.
That draft took an hour, and the fact they decided to televise it live right before the game, if you turned on for All-Star Weekend and wanted to see the game, and you turned on and got the draft like I did, and an hour later after the family had dinner and the dishes were done and everybody, and I go, and Lisa goes, I thought you were watching the All-Star game. Well, I thought I was, but an hour later, we're still doing a draft.
I never even turned it on. I'll be honest. I never even turned it on.
Yeah, I threw it on for a second. I watched a couple of minutes of the game. Like, this is just a waste of my time.
I don't think they can save it, though. I really don't.
Yeah, I think they can.
How?
Wait till LeBron quits.
And then now
because I think this is a – when you look at, like, All-Star games and Pro Bowls, like, people talk about how when you used to go to the Pro Bowl and Peyton Manning was there, like, Pat McAfee tells these stories all the time, how, like, there was just a different environment because Peyton Manning was running the show. And when Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, these guys were talking about, were playing in these games, and they cared, and they wanted to win, like, they wanted to be there.
Yeah.
LeBron James doesn't want to be there. You know, he doesn't care. He doesn't want to try hard.
Let me also make it very clear.
Did he play?
LeBron got hurt. He got his finger caught in the rim on an alley-oop or a dunk.
So he's played more games for the All-Star team than he has the Lakers.
He played a half.
Broke the record.
Yeah, he played a half.
Giannis played one play.
I saw he's a New York team specialist, by the way.
The conspiracy theory is that he knew he wasn't going to play in the game. So he started the game. He scored the first bucket. It was all scripted. And the reason why he did it was so James Harden couldn't be an All-Star.
I like it.
Yep.
Yeah, there is. Look, I could tell you that just from the people I know on the inside. There's a true hatred between, at least from Giannis's perspective, going Harden's way. I like it. That's what's going to cause better games and rivalries in the NBA. But
Harden's got to be an All-Star again.
This year, that's worthy of it.
0830, McClung will be the next Jeremy Lin. Big hype for a couple weeks before he fizzles out and we never hear about him again. McClung would be lucky to have the NBA career that Jeremy Lin did. Jeremy Lin got paid. Jeremy Lin got a contract.
Yes, he did.
Mac McClung has made $106,000 in his career. He made $100,000 by winning the slam dunk contest.
Unreal.
He made a hundo?
He made $100,000 for winning it.
Oh, good for him.
Home Run Derby or NBA All-Star Weekend?
Derby.
Home Run Derby.
I think this is more Home Run Derby versus slam dunk contest.
Derby.
I would take slam dunk contest if we had the stars.
The only thing they got, they ruined the derby a little bit.
They have. The time, I hate it.
They just...
But again,
they need to go with a wide shot and let you see everything. Like, you miss half the action because it's so fast.
They need to bring back the 10 outs.
Yeah, 10 outs was better.
10 outs was way better.
As long as and Berman's got to just be off of it forever.
I hate the time because the time just, you can't see the flight of the ball.
Yeah.
You can't see how far they're hitting it. And that was the whole point.
That's true.
That's why you got to go
true.
Wide shot
but,
and get everything.
Again, you get too cute. And like you said, Joel, with the keep it simple, stupid. Like, at a certain point, it works. You're still getting an audience because you're seeing the truly gifted players at a sport like the three-point contest. You're seeing them at the peak of their shooting prowess have a contest to see who's the best for that one given day. Home run derby. See the best home run hitters in baseball. Hit them long and high and far and see who hits the most. But don't have to give me the painted baseball and the lucky all-star bonus ball and the glow-in-the-dark triple the number ball. Screw all that. Just let me see who can shoot it or hit it the best.
713-780-ESPN every Monday at 2. It's our Mailbag Monday where you can ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. If you want to know more about Joe George, why he's wearing a Houston Cougars shirt and a Houston Astro hat.
But you see his undies.
Maybe. I haven't seen them yet. Have you?
No, but I'm sure that they're team related.
All right, Mailbag Monday. Get your questions in for the Killer Bees. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.